you got to figure out what's my priority. Tie it to business risk, because business risk will get funding. Cyber risk are just going to be another 10-page report on why a firewall is important. But if you can tie that firewall to my major production line that does have a huge cyber risk, management understands that's the moneymaker.
Welcome to Cybersecurity Heroes, an Iron Skills podcast about you, the heroes of cybersecurity. You're about to hear and learn practical and experiential knowledge in our conversations with CISOs, security directors and architects, SOC analysts, and other InfoSec stars so we can become more cyber resilient and safer together. Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to Cybersecurity Heroes. I'm your host for today's episode, Brendan Rudd, Director of Lifecycle Marketing at IronScales, a self-learning email security platform. Today, I'm joined by Tom Jackson, an OT cybersecurity consultant with over 15 years of experience, focusing on development of OT, ICS, IoT solutions for securing the OT environment. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Brendan. I appreciate it. Look forward to it.
Awesome. We have a great topic of discussion on OT and IT. But before we begin, tell our listeners a little about you and your background and what you're working on these days.
Sure thing. Myself, I come from a manufacturing background. I've spent over 35 years in industry. The last 15, as you'd mentioned, specifically in the OT cybersecurity area. Prior to that, I had worked in semiconductors, telecom, datacom, wireless, and then made a transition into OT, operational technology, cybersecurity, a little over 15 years ago. And that's kind of where I've been since.
Thanks. So today we're talking about OT. Why is OT security important? And can you explain, maybe for some of our listeners who don't or not so familiar with OT, what it is?
Sure thing. I think that's probably a very good, very germane question. I think a lot of people, if they have not heard of OT, may have different ideas that they conjure up. But typically, when you think of cybersecurity, the way I look at it is most of us, when we think cyber, are thinking IT, the enterprise, the LAN, the WAN, where we are in our office, the computer, SQL servers, web. I think that's really where a lot of us think about when we think cyber. In addition to that, that's where a lot of today's marketed solutions for cyber are targeted, on the enterprise. But if you flip the coin over, there's the flip side, which is the OT, or the operational technology component. And what that focuses on is a lot of times it's just easy to think of it as the industrial space. So virtually every company makes, manufactures, produces, sells, pumps, boils, does something to produce money. And that's going to be the operational side. So I think the three items that come to most people's minds when I say in industry are going to be in the critical infrastructure, which is going to be things like power utility, oil, gas, chemical. But that list goes on all the way to amusement parks, manufacturing, hospitals. It's a very, very broad area, operational technology. And it does differ from IT. I think one of the most important things when people first hear about OT or read about it, I think they tend to look at it, because it's cyber, they tend to deal with it from a technical issue. I think it's easier, and in my opinion, the way I approach it is, I look at it from the environment. OT and IT are two different environments. And what I mean by that is, when you look at OT, it's there to produce, it's there to keep things running, to have uptime. So one of the things that I always use typically when I first start talking about it is, in the cyber world, we have the CIA triangle that kind of defines priorities in the cyber world. And when you look at it, you have confidentiality, integrity, and availability. From an IT perspective, really the CIA triangle, the primary one, is going to be the confidentiality. If you look at businesses in cyber today, so much is focused on the confidentiality. The data I have, I don't want it to get out. I don't want people to get in to look at it. I don't want people to steal it. It's confidentiality. But when you look at OT, it's really about uptime, availability, and safety. And when you think about it from that perspective, it begins to, you begin to look at it from an environmental shift. Again, you know, if you go out into the operations of a plant, a site, you're going to see the focus there is not going to be people sitting behind a desk sending and reading emails. It's going to be about maintaining, keeping production up and running. And I think the simplest way that I always phrase it when I talk to executives is when you look at OT and IT, IT is where you count the money, OT is where you make that money. And that, I think, really helps define the difference between the two.
OT versus IT, how does it all come together with cybersecurity?
I think when you look at OT and people begin, companies begin to investigate or look at their OT side of things, there's a tendency to say, well, we've been spending a lot of money. We've spent decades on maturing our IT environment. We've done a really good job. And there's no doubt most companies have. But when you look at OT, going back to that environment phrase, there's a tendency to say, well, I'm just going to treat one like I treated the other, and I will basically get the same results. But again, the imagery that I always look at when I talk to people about one of the big differences in securing OT and IT is what I always refer to as the kingdom and the village. So the kingdom is your corporate headquarters. This is where everybody resides. This is where your payroll, your web servers, your corporate data is maintained. And if you want more security, you dig a deeper moat, you build a thicker wall. That's how you maintain your confidentiality. But outside the walls of the kingdom are the village, and the village are your plants. They could be the oil plants. They could be your individual manufacturing plants. And as such, most IT cybersecurity is really set up to defend themselves against the villagers. And in that case, a lot of IT cyber does not necessarily inherently benefit the OT from that approach. And so when people first go outside the kingdom, if you would, to go look at the village is different. It's a different environment. You're dealing with systems that last 10, 20, 15, 30 years. That's what they're built. They're built for incredibly long timeframes. As such, most of these systems that run our plants, I always like to look at PLCs and SCADA and HMI. This is where all these acronyms come together. But really, at the end of the day, these systems predate the modern computer system. So what does that mean? Well, it means there was no protocol that we look at today. There wasn't a common programming language. These big companies that manufacture these systems built them as they designed and invented them. So there's a lot of custom protocols. There's a lot of custom functionality that you don't see today in computer systems. And as such, cybersecurity was never built in. Maybe the need for a password was never built in. So when a lot of people look at the technology behind OT, they're mystified that all this great technology and things that we can take advantage of in the OSI model aren't there. And therefore, you have to now take 10, 15 steps back, because these OT are purpose-built. You're not going to see a laptop hooked up to every process. You're going to see older computer systems. It's not unusual to find Windows 7 everywhere, XP everywhere. And the reason is that is not seen as a computer system. It's seen as a tool. It came with the assembly line. And this is how I get the assembly line fired up in the morning. I go over to the tool and log in. You know, there's an adage we always use is when you look at OT and IT, you know, the world of OT is really predicated because, again, uptime, availability, and safety. It's a wrench. I bought a wrench 30 years ago. The wrench still works. Why do I need to replace the wrench? And so a lot of times that's kind of what we're up against. So really it starts with basically cyber hygiene, because when you walk into these plants, it's real easy to look at them and say, okay, we're going to have to gut this place. Again, we go back to that, to my issue of look at it from an environment. Why do they do the things they do, and how can you work with that?
It's really interesting. And what would you say is a commonly held belief in OTIT that you passionately disagree with?
Well, passionately disagree. I think a lot of it is passionately want to clarify is probably a better way. You know, OT is, you know, if you look at the classic marketing where you have the iceberg where everything's underneath it. Really, the OT is that underlying aspect. You know, if you look at oil, gas, you look at chemical, they may have two or three corporate offices around the world, but they could have hundreds of sites, right? And these sites have just as many cyber issues as the corporate office. But when you start to try to get your hand wrapped around them, the numbers become just staggering. You know, it's hard enough for me with my IT department to keep the corporate office safe. How do I do that over 100 plants? So a lot of times, companies are just, you know, it's the sheer numbers that become kind of daunting. But I think a lot of times the first approach is well, we've spent all this time in the IT. We're very secure. Of course, we could always be better. We've got great documentation. You know, I've got tons of compliance documents, things of this nature. All I'll do is I'll just go out, deliver them to the plants, and then have the plants adapt to my current compliance or my current documentation. The problem is that doesn't work for a number of reasons. You know, again, back to the environment. You just can't go out into the OT and say on chapter three under patching, if you patch every once a month, like we say on Wednesday, you'll become compliant. We're safe. This compliance works for us. It should work for you. What you're going to run into is the environment I talk about. Why don't they patch? It's not that these folks don't understand patching. They may not understand it as well as an IT department, but they do see it as part of a necessary element to maintain uptime, availability, and safety. The problem they have is, think about it. When you're in the office or you're at home and you get a patch, when the patch is complete, there's a good probability you got to reboot your computer. Well, how do you do that in an operational environment? How do you reboot a power plant Tuesday at 3 p.m. because the corporate manual said patch? You can't. This is where the environment comes. You need to be able to work with the OT folks to say, okay, well, so you do understand patching. The issue isn't patching. The issue is really comes down to interval. Oh, and then this is where you learn about maintenance windows and working with them. And of course, there's a lot of other issues on patching. You can go into that on its own. But I think that's part of it. I think the other thing that companies can help begin to understand is a lot of times things come down to what's your standard, what's your baseline, what do you measure yourself against? How do you understand maturity? So we've had NIST 853 forever. That's a good baseline. I mean, but if OT and IT were the same, then NIST would not have come out with 882. And when you read the two documents, they're very, very similar. But if you really read between the lines, it's NIST 882 is doing its best to adapt to the OT environment. They've taken some things out that really aren't applicable and added some areas in that are. And I think that's one of the areas that people have to look at. I think there's a tendency just to want to treat it like the IT environment, and I'm just going to go out and fight a fire one plant at a time. And you really need to have a better plan, kind of a strategy going in. I mean, if you want to look at it technically, couple areas that cause a lot of grief for people is there's a lot of IT tools that are very mature, very useful that really help secure the IT environment. But when you look at OT, there's a huge issue between agent type devices that need an agent and agentless. You know, the OT needs an agentless. An agent device just puts too much load on these older networks. They're not designed that way. The second one is there's a lot of value in having network monitoring systems where I can just run an immediate asset check, or I can look at the network, see what's running on it, see what protocols, see what issues are happening. Those have always tended to be in an active mode where they go out and ping the network. The problem with that is that those pings are for an OSI or a TCP type device. They're not meant for these older protocols, and they cause these devices to go down. I mean, you know, one of the things I always, try to, it's kind of a joke, is you look at The Hunt for Red October, Sean Connery's favorite line is, just one ping and one ping only. I mean, it's really a delicate environment when you get down to that. But I think to sum it up, and again, not always, but sometimes in cyber, there's a tendency to say I'm compliant. We've worked years to be compliant. I've got documents. I've got everything I need to back it up. Every year we check our compliance and then check the box. And the reality is compliance isn't security. You know, there's a lot of companies that are fully compliant with a reg or a standard or an internal process, but they still get hacked. And there's a real need, I think, in, you know, whether it's IT or OT, that compliance is necessary, but compliance needs to grow with the threat landscape.
You told me a not so funny story the last time, and maybe you want to share it with our audience. You had a client that had just bought or fitted the entire building with the new system.
Yeah. I think I think that's a good one. Because one thing within the OT is that, you know, I had about a year ago, there was a client and they had just bought a brand new system. And we were brought in to help assess the environment, which is not unusual. Even in OT, as companies start to level up, if you would, and understanding the importance. And in this particular, you know, they just wanted to take a look and really establish a maturity baseline for where they're at today. And in doing so, we went in, did our normal walk through the facilities, looked at all the different areas. You know, so these are covering, you know, steam, chiller, vacuum pumps, HVAC systems, you name it. You know, this isn't your normal wiring closet. And at the end, we gave them the report back, and the report had stated that one of the key systems was end of life, and brand new building hadn't even opened. And the reality was, is the client pushed back and said, well, that can't be. We just bought everything. But the reality was that the computer system to run the particular control environment was Windows 7. It was end of life at the time it was delivered. And the client, being on the IT side, couldn't understand it. And although, you know, yes, I have issues with that, but the reality is it goes back to the environment. They had spec'd out a very complicated HVAC system. The computer came with it. So there wasn't a focus on, gee, what system should, you know, what computer should we really buy to run this? The computer came with. And because the HVAC system was designed years ago to run on this system, it ships with that system. And so, again, it's, you know, this begins to pull back a little bit. Supply chain issues, you know, who knew to look at that? You know, and again, you know, different systems, different environments, but it's interesting. And again, the system worked. Go back to my wrench. This time it wasn't a 30-year-old wrench. It was a brand new wrench, and it's going to last 30 years. It just may have some cyber issues.
So hopefully that will reduce or prevent anyone missing that step in their process, because I'm sure it can be a costly one. I would also like to touch on IT-OT convergence.
Sure. Well, I think with the IT-OT convergence, what we're seeing today is, you know, I actually take a step back and look at, you know, what's been changing in OT in that landscape is, you know, I've been in it for a number of years now. And when I got into it, it was pre-NERC-SIP. So NERC-SIP was the first regulation that had significant monetary fines within the industrial space. It was for the power utility companies. And this drove really the wake-up call, if you would, within the operational space. So at that time, I was working for a large industrial control system manufacturer. So kind of had a ground floor there. And at that time, you know, the hardware software vendors that sell equipment, they don't really always see it as their job to help you as an industry become compliant. It's you buy my system, my system's going to work per the spec and the standard, but any compliance issue unique to your industry, they kind of see it as, well, that's really up to you. Unfortunately, when you get to industry, not every industry has specialists that are there to help with the implementation of networking gear. Their specialists are chemical engineers that run the chemical plant, petroleum engineers that run the pipelines. So there's a gap sometimes with that knowledge. But I think one thing that I found interesting for the first 10 years, nothing changed. It was Groundhog Day every day. We would go out, we'd see the same things, write the same report with the same issues, and every day was the same. And part of the problem at the time was that it was very manual. very subjective, very qualitative. So the more you as an individual spent in the field, the better you were at identifying. So it was really hard to train people up to be very effective out the chute doing assessments. But the other thing too was that these assessments were kind of a checkbox under the compliance report that a lot of IT people. So it was check the box, move on. So a lot of people weren't really reading them. Again, the plant folks, you know, their job, uptime availability. So if we got in, got out, didn't cause any problems, everybody was happy. IT's happy, it was checked. Manufacturing was happy, we didn't cause any issues. But then what happened recently is IoT showed up a number of years ago, Internet of Things, and it really, you know, from people looking a little bit ahead in the OT space, it really was a, you know, if you look at it from a commercial standpoint, not a consumer standpoint, it's really going to reside in the OT space. So when companies were first looking at IoT and how to implement it to get stranded data out of their network so that they can get the rich, vast knowledge of their data for analytics, either on process or improvements, or looking at things like advanced analytics for predictive maintenance, they needed IoT. And what happened was that all of a sudden now, OT that may not have been on their radar is, because that device is going to have to be at the plant. You're not going to run a vibration sensor in the corporate office. You're going to put it out. You're going to run the IoT device in the plant. And that started to wake people up. Then ransomware showed up. Ransomware was an interesting one. We had Stuxnet years ago, and being an OT practitioner, I was thinking this is the wake-up call. But Stuxnet quickly became an academic exercise, fell off, and you didn't really see a whole lot. But when ransomware started to show up in the last few years, suddenly, you know, you had the attention. It was shutting plants down. The board could not ignore it. You know, Maersk, the shipping line, you had Merck, the pharmaceutical. Just recently, you had Coors. These weren't little blips. These things, again, go back to my first comment. They were, IT was counting money just fine, but one day they couldn't count any money because the OT wasn't making it. Now, everybody's looking at OT, and then suddenly out of nowhere, the cloud shows up. And the cloud shows up, and the promise of the cloud is a ubiquitous understanding of your entire company. I'm going to get all the data and all the richness that comes with the cloud and the applications and things that are just weren't possible building it on your own. And this is good stuff, but the OT is part of that. You know, I can't just land the cloud on corporate and have 100 plants still sitting, you know, in the 1990s. I need to get that data out. I want to get that benefit. And that brings us to the question you had asked, which is really on the, you know, IT-OT convergence. I've heard that term over and over again. People would ask me 10 years ago, I didn't have an answer. But really, OT-IT convergence is the cloud. I'm going to have my OT data and my IT data going to one cloud. It'll converge at that point.
And where would you say we are today with IT-OT convergence? Is there a driving force? What is the driving force?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's happening is it still looks at the cloud. So when you look at OT, it went from decades of just very still waters. Nobody was looking at it. It wasn't broke, so why fix it type attitude. They didn't have credit cards, so why would hackers be attracted to them? So a lot of the old school thinking that kind of kept them hidden, if you would, broke through, as I mentioned, with IoT. Well, I'm going to, you know, we need better information. So we'll go buy these IoT devices and, oh, where do they go? Out in the plant.
Sort of like a dormant volcano.
Exactly. Somebody picked at it. And the cloud coming in, they're really forced to take up where they left off with IoT. Cloud has so much horsepower and so much availability. The question is that it tends to be driven from an IT first approach, which is totally understandable, but it's going to bleed out to the OT. And what's happening is that even as people see challenges in the IT landing the cloud, you know, the cloud was built for the enterprise. The cloud was built for these types of products, these servers, these systems, you know, the OSI model. the cloud wasn't necessarily built to take on Modbus and BACnet, you know, out in the plant. And so there's going to be a little bit of a delay as people try to address that gap right now. And they will. I think they really will. But I think right now what's holding back a little bit of the conversion is just that delta between the, I haven't looked at my OT environment in 30 years, and now I have to land the cloud in the next 30 days. You know, that's going to be really the wake-up call, I think, is where you're at. And I think a lot of CISOs now are seeing their life change from being where they were defensive in nature, where if there was a problem, they go buy a box, fix the problem, and hope no more problems. I think the cloud now is coming down to them. Company says, we're going to do it. The CISO has to make it happen. And with it comes, areas that go beyond normal point solution cybersecurity. It's becoming a much bigger issue, and the OT is in there, and you're seeing a lot more companies looking for a comprehensive roadmap.
And how vulnerable would you say we are today now that IT and OT are merging?
So, yeah, vulnerability, always a good one. I think, you know, a couple items when I think vulnerability, and I'll get just a little off topic, I apologize, but I think one of the areas in OT, when I look at environment and we talk vulnerability in cyber, there's an immediate think of, you know, risk and vulnerability assessment. One thing that I think is important when we look at environments and we look at vulnerabilities, okay, it's risk. And of course, risk varies. But, you know, at 100,000 feet, you know, and IT risk is reasonably the same. But when you look at OT, the risk varies. So the risk for a person manufacturing sneakers is going to be a different risk than somebody running a chemical plant. They're running the same gear, the same equipment from the same vendors with the same problems. But at the end of the day, their risk appetite will dramatically change just because of what they do and what they manufacture. And that has to be brought in when you look at the vulnerabilities, because there's a tendency to assume, well, there are no exposures in the plant. All risk doesn't have to be life, doesn't, you know, have to be life and limb. You know, it can just be production shutdown, right? But I think where I see vulnerability in OT today is it's really awareness. And I don't mean that the vulnerability is awareness. I think we're at that tipping point where things are changing so fast in the last couple of years that the thing that we were missing was awareness. That was where the vulnerability came from. You know, we were completely blind to an entirely large point of most companies. And that awareness now is going to go a long way to help address that vulnerability. And in that vulnerability, you know, you're already seeing in the market over the last few years is there's a whole cadre of OT, ICS specific tools that weren't in the market. Because if you remember earlier, everything we did was manual. If a client wanted us to do a asset inventory, if it was a chemical plant, it could be 10, 15, 20 acres, and we'd have to have people out there with a clipboard, handwriting it, transposing it to Excel, because there were no tools. Now, you know, there's new technology, and that's going to go a long way because it can be implemented in the network. And now the OT is starting to benefit from some of those hardware advances in IT, as I mentioned. The difference is these tools now are OT sensitive. They're OT aware. They're going to be typically agentless, and they're going to be passive. So instead of having an IT scanner, or what I used to call wolves in sheep clothing, you know, you're actually having OT tools for an OT environment, just like you have IT tools for an IT environment for all these years. And that's going to go a long way to help companies get an insight to the legacy of that network. The other thing it's going to help do is produce the necessary data. It's no longer a subjective report. It's going to be, you know, here's what's going on in my network. We have these misconfigurations. We have all this stuff's talking to the internet. You know, I can tell you because I have network traces. This is going to go a long way, I think, to help close the gap by putting OT onto a legitimate cyber strategy for the long term.
What would you say are some of the key challenges still faced in OT, mm-hmm. in your perspective?
Well, yeah. Well, in OT, I think, you know, back to the iceberg again, but you know, this time we're at the tip of the iceberg. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of environments that are OT. I mean, every large Class A real estate has has building management systems. That's an OT, right? Obviously, industry has it. But when you start to look at it, we've only really started to deal with the early adopters at this point. You know, companies that either have a significant risk profile that they're trying to address, or because there's not a lot of regulations in the OT other than power utility, but there's still a focus on uptime availability. And there's as the awareness grows, we're starting to see more and more companies. I mean, we're so far away from saying cyber is ubiquitous in OT as we might be able to say in IT. But I think one of the things and one of the challenges we still face is I can still meet with clients. And, you know, the problem we run into is that the kingdom in the village. If you ask the question, is OT secured? They'll say yes. And what they mean by that is we put that DMZ, that firewall pair between us and the villagers, and therefore we are secure. You know, the question needs to be is not are we secure, is are you secure? Are you securing the entire environment? And that tends to be the weak link in the chain in a lot of discussions. People need to ask the next question. Because a lot of what we see when we do get in is the DMZ. Well, okay, you know, good to have it, but who owns it? Who wrote the rules? Because a lot of times OT vulnerabilities come in from the IT side. IT has been around a lot more and has been the favorite of hackers. So they're very good at hacking IT. And when they get in and start moving around, once they see that soft underbelly in the OT, so a lot of times that DMZ is to protect them from the OT, but not the OT from IT. But once you get into the OT environment, simple things like segmentation. These buildings are built over years. They're either acquired, mergers, acquisitions. You know, 30 years ago, it was a 100 square foot plant. Now it's a 10,000 square foot plant. So things are added without what you would call a cyber strategy. They're built and expanded as needed. And in doing so, segmentation's often overlooked, or it's assumed because nothing's hooked together. But segmentation without design is almost as bad as bad segmentation, because you don't know what you have. Patching, as I mentioned, that's another topic. Patching is much more complex because it's not just OS, it's firmware. You know, OS patches the Windows box, and that's as far as my life goes. But when you get into OT, that box is your engineering workstation. All of the necessary updates are going to be at the endpoints, and those endpoints are no longer PCs. They're no longer printers. They're going to end up being, you know, the control units, and they are going to be updated on firmware. So there's a big issue around that. User access control. It's not uncommon as people start to dig in on some of these OT events. When you've got one PC in a plant running 24/7 with three shifts, and there's 10 people to a shift, that's 30 people a day. You know, do they all have their own password? No. They tend to share a common password because, again, the keyboard and the PC are how I get the production running. So it's not viewed as, well, that's my private business and nobody needs to see it. Everybody has access. That's problematic. But again, from an environment, you do understand why they do it. Because sometimes to shut the line down, I have to have access to the keyboard, and I can't wait for the operator that has admin rights because they're at lunch break or they only work first shift and it's third shift. So user access is another big area. And then lastly, remote access. What a lot of people don't understand in plants is if I have five vendors, there's five points of trade access, what we used to call trade access, which is in IT called remote access. When you buy a system from a large vendor, you know you don't have the ability to maintain it. These are big, complicated systems. So you'll buy almost every area you go into that has a vendor, there's a maintenance contract with that vendor. And part of that maintenance contract is going to be the uptime of the system, not from a security's point of view, but from a maintenance point of view. And the more you pay, what happens is the operator then has the ability to online to ping a tech back at Acme Control Systems, who again can log on immediately to tell them what's going on or what needs to be fixed or run diagnostics. And again, from the environment, that makes perfect sense. Uptime and availability. I don't have time to wait, I need access. So remote access is very common. The question is, who set the remote access up? Did IT? No, the vendor did. And the vendor's not an IT department. So the vendor will set up the simplest, easiest form. What a lot of people don't realize is RDP is alive and well, thanks to OT. So again, these are these areas, segmentation, patching, user access, and remote, these are like old school IT issues that still exist in the OT. So OT is like cyber OT is like IT cyber was about 30 years ago. It's just hygiene and catching up.
What are some OT program complexities you can share other than maybe what you have already that you could share with our audience so they don't make the same mistakes?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at OT and IT, again, if you treat it from an environment, why are things done the way they do? It's not, when I say why, I don't mean the excuses. It's understanding why. For instance, patching, the why is real simple. It'll shut down the plant. I need to shut down every 6 months when I have a maintenance window. That's not the level of discussion happening. It's seen as a checklist. So I think, first of all, is to really understand why they do what they do. And then come up with, okay, what can we do? For instance, patching is another one that's a pitfall. Companies want to go in and force patching because patching is well documented as, you know, not patching is a bad thing because you're just giving the bad actors pretty much a blueprint to how to get into your network. But the problem with patching is that in some kinds in OT, I cannot patch. I have an end-of-life operating system that's no longer supported, and I have tied to a PLC system that is end of life. So now I can't patch the OS, I can't patch the firmware. What do I do? Well, I can't just replace the $2,000 computer because the $10 million network runs on it. So this is where, again, IT has to look at it and say, okay, it's a known issue. I didn't know yesterday I couldn't patch it. And then work defense in depth, old school strategy. So you have to be a little creative. You have to look at why it is and part of it. I think the biggest issue at hand is the framework. If you go in with, you've got to do an assessment. I know if you're in IT, assessments have been around forever, but in OT, nobody's ever done one. So assessments help you understand where you are today. What's my maturity? You know it's going to be low, but you got to have it so when you fix things, you can see the maturity needle move. Am I doing the right things? Is it impactful? And through that assessment, you can look at what do you need to develop? This is where you can pick out your priorities because you're going to find hundreds of things wrong, but you got to figure out what's my priority. Tie it to business risk because business risk will get funding. Cyber risk are just going to be another 10-page report on why a firewall is important. But if you can tie that firewall to my major production line that does have a huge cyber risk, management understands that's the moneymaker, they'll fund it. And I think the others implement. In many cases, implementation becomes problematic because IT, understandably, if I touch it, I own it. So maybe I don't want to touch it. So there's a need sometimes to team up with, you know, good third parties that can help implement, maybe the vendors. And then lastly, management. Management's been an area that's been hard to do until recently. As I mentioned, there's so many OT tools out there that are really the ground floor for how I can actually get eyes on glass and find out what's going on in the system. So it's kind of an indirect answer, but, you know, start with an assessment. I know it sounds, gee, we've done millions of them, but start with an assessment with people that understand the OT environment. And work your way through the development, the implement, and the management. Because once you get that cycle done, something's changed, and now you have a repeatable process, I think is really, really critical. And, you know, and that's going to be part of the roadmap. I have done assessments. We've worked with companies that have done assessments, but that assessment gets filed. You know, because one thing I'd like to ask people is if you've done OT assessments, it's not have you done one. What actionable items did you work on after the assessment? You know, and that's typically where you're going to find people just saying, well, we did it. We were going to get around to it, but it's already been 6 months. So we'll wait 2 years and do another.
What advice would you give to consultants or IT and security folks actually going on site and building relationships with OT operators in the big three, for example, as you called it?
Yeah, I think, you know, my advice there is that in my 15 years of doing it, we probably spent more time as moderators working between IT and OT than we did really cyber experts. And again, when I say moderator, there's been years of, unfortunately, a little bit of animosity built up. And again, when you're an OT, when you're in the plant and your job is to maintain the uptime, availability, and safety, I mean, those are not small things. And somebody shows up from corporate and then runs a scan that's active and takes the network down, the trust is broken. Or people show up and keep sending memos, the trust is broken. And it, unfortunately, it cuts both ways. And so what I always emphasize is get out there and meet with them. You know, explain that cyber is not a checklist. It's not a compliance. It's not a career limiting event. But explain to them that cyber can help mitigate risks that can shut systems down that will impact uptime, availability, and safety. It's not cyber for cyber's sake. It's cyber. It's another dimension of maintenance. You know, if you get hacked and you go down and that and you go down in a non-elegant way, is that going to be detrimental to safety? Yes. Then, you know, let us work together on seeing what the cyber issues are. I think that's really one of the big ones. And understanding the risk. The corporate office risk is going to be different than the manufacturing risk. Understand those risks, because that's really going to target what needs to be done and also why you are the target of what's happening to you in the case of an attacker. So it's really important to understand that environment, work with them to understand that cyber is just not a checklist. It's really going to be part of the DNA. It's an extension of maintenance. It's just looking at the network in a different way. And then ultimately, you know, if you do that, then you have a much more robust conversation. And I think in closing on that, I think what we really need to understand and really where we're heading here is we can no longer continue to ignore OT, because the hackers aren't, they're there, ransomware, they're starting to understand it's a value target and it's easy money to be made. I think, really at the end of the day, awareness is really our best weapon, knowing we need to learn about what we don't know.
And don't forget the most important piece of advice, your barbecue skills.
That's right. Because one of the things when we would bring on new folks is, especially when you go to large, heavy industry sites, chemical, power utility, oil, gas. One of the things that I always found was when you're on these large sites, you're wearing hard hats, Nomex suits, steel-toed boots. It's no longer the dockers, the dockers and the wingtips. But one of the things we always found was that when we work with these folks on these sites, if you were invited to barbecue lunch out back, then you were definitely, they saw you as a trusted advisor. And that's how you knew that you had really made the grade and had really integrated with the team in a way that was beneficial to not only them, but the IT department that may have brought you, but also for yourself.
Well, thanks for sharing that final story. So I want to move to our lighter section of the show, which I call rapid fire questions. So if you could invite one or two people to our show, who would it be?
Let me see. So a couple names from the past, Vinton Cerf and Bob Kahn, kind of seen as the earlier fathers of the internet. It'd be interesting to get their perspective of when they set the internet up, what were they thinking back then versus what in the world would they be thinking now and what we've done with it.
What's the most overrated cybersecurity tactic?
So I'm looking at that one from an OT perspective, so I'll probably catch a little bit of heat for it, but from overrated, an OT environment, I think, especially today, I'm putting all my caveats to minimize the slings and arrows. I think most overrated is pen testing. Pen testing in my mind is really for a much more mature environment where you've had time to build it up. You've got your, you've got your cyber practice in place. You've got your defenses there, and pen testing is a great way to test for holes and weaknesses. But, overrated in OT, pen testing. I cannot tell you how many clients will just say, well, I'll do pen testing.
And what's the most underrated cyber tactic?
you know, back to what I said earlier, I think the most underrated is assessments. And the flip side of that is that assessments have been around forever in IT. In some cases, they're seen as old school. When you look at many IT environments, they've moved beyond that. You know, audits are the maturity. You know, we're there, we're where we need to be. I'm auditing now. You know, where assessments are things you did years ago. But in reality, I think if you look at it from an OT environment, it's like I said, you don't know what you don't know. You need an assessment. You need a clean set of eyes to get there, to look at this environment that understands the environment. And the fact that we do have a NIST standard that we can all use, we may not all agree on it, but at least we can all use it. It's a great way to see what the maturity is. And the reason I have pen testing and assessment is a lot of companies, when they see pen testing and you read it, it's like, well, if I do pen testing, they're going to come in and tell me all my weaknesses and how to fix it. That's not what pen testing is. They're coming in to see if they can get in. And that's pretty much a given in the OT environment, most cases. That's one reason I say assessment. You know, it's an old school technique, but it's an old school environment. You need to start with an assessment so that you can move to development, implement.
And what's your all-time favorite book on cybersecurity?
You know, good question. You know, that one's always interesting. One of the books that I found most interesting to myself is Open Source Intelligent Techniques by Michael Basil. I'm hoping I pronounced his name right. You know, it's to me, you know, when I look at cyber and you know, I look at all the things you can learn and all the technology around it, you know, with OSINT out there, it's amazing that when you claw back a lot of what's happened in the past with cybersecurity attacks, so much of it is rooted in OSINT, you know, the open source intelligence. And I just find it fascinating that, you know, it's not always Jason Bourne in the basement with a hoodie. It's somebody that can work a phone system or send a clever email that can break down million-dollar defenses.
And who is the cyber influencer that you're most influenced by?
You know, that one, you know, I'm more influenced by the industry, I think, than probably any one individual. I like OT because it is vast, ever-changing. You don't go into the same oil refinery twice. One thing I always tell people, you know, even though I'm much older than I was years ago, I still find OT fascinating because it's like a paid field trip. You know, you get to go in and see how things are made. You know, I mean, I've seen all kinds of crazy things. And, you know, I've been in ballparks, I've been in amusement parks, I've been in nuke plants, power plants, you know, even plants that make carpeting. And they're all fascinating watching these machines work. And just seeing them and doing it, I think, has really given me appreciation just for the vastness of what OT really is.
And if you could ask one question to your peers, what would you ask them?
Boy, I probably already gave that one away earlier. If I had to do that again in the OT environment, it's not if you've done an OT assessment, it's when you did an OT assessment, how many activities that were identified did you act on?
If you could ask our CEO any question, what would it be?
Did you wish you paid more attention to some of the cyber issues that were brought to you years ago? In other words, I think, would it have been cheaper back then than it is today? Hindsight being 2020, of course.
So thank you, Tom. It's really been great to connect with you. Loved hearing your stories and all your advice, and hope our audience will be able to take some of those things away and apply them. If anyone would like to connect with you and, you know, talk more on the topic, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
The best way, I think, the simplest way is LinkedIn. You can look me up. Thomas Jackson is how I'll search up. So it will be Thomas, Thomas Jackson. I do have parentheses Tom in there, but it's Thomas Jackson on LinkedIn. I'm out of the Dallas, Texas area. That's how you know you found the right one.
Perfect.
And please feel free to LinkedIn. I'd love talking OT shop, and I'd love to continue this conversation with anybody else who's interested. You know, I find it fascinating, And it's definitely an area that's only going to get larger. It's just growing every year.
Yeah, we'll be sure to include that in the show notes. So if anyone wants to connect. So again, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today on Cybersecurity Heroes. And to the rest of you, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Brandon, for having me. Appreciate it.
Cybersecurity Heroes is brought to you by IronSkills, an AI-powered, self-learning email security platform that helps security professionals proactively prevent, detect, and remediate phishing attacks in a matter of seconds, not hours or days. And we have an exclusive offer for our podcast listeners. Discover dormant phishing threats in your organization's mailboxes. Get a free 90-day scan back with a detailed report. Integrate in seconds with two clicks via API to Microsoft Office 365 and see what your current email security is missing. Go to ironscales.com/freescan to learn more.
That's a wrap for this episode of Cybersecurity Heroes. Practical and experiential knowledge on a day in the life of security heroes. Catch our next episode by subscribing through your favorite podcast platform. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating for the show. They really help a lot. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.